This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Six.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay, it's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Hey, everyone. Hi. How are you? Welcome to ENN. On this a Friday evening, I come to you from the D.C. area in Kensington, Maryland. I'd like to start off tonight's ENN by saying good evening to Michael.
What does Kay know?
And then I'd like to say good evening to Don.
The summer of gay.
Excuse me?
The summer of gay.
I don't remember.
I am a fat flounder.
Thank
good
you.
For you, Anthony.
You know what? Anthony said, this is what happened. Why hide from what happened? It wasn't offensive. It was just a misspeak.
That's all it was.
I bit into a fish taco.
You hook up with the tuner.
What have you done?
So, guys, we should start off talking some Giants, shouldn't we?
I think it's right. Important to.
Yeah, okay. Let's hear from Chris Canty.
Anthony.
Uh-oh, what happened to Michael? Michael?
We lost Michael.
Something happened to Michael. Michael! All right, let's hear from Chris Canty. He was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max talking about the Giants' defense and how they're to blame for this loss.
Let me tell you, the offense ain't to blame for last night's loss. If your team puts up 26 points, the defense has to make that stick. And so the miscues at the end of the first half and at the end of the game ultimately are what caused the Giants an opportunity to win last night. As I said on Twitter, they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Now, here's Damian Woody. He was on SVP last night. He reacted to the offsides on the field goal.
How in the world do you jump off sides and you're right in front of the football?
You spent your living up there on the line. If I'm looking at that ball, I'm not moving until I see it move. I don't know. You tell me. What happens in that situation?
Man, that's going to be a long flight home, and that's a short flight.
What a great line.
Yeah, that actually was a great line by Wood. I got to tell you, I know there's a lot of back and forth about whether or it was or it wasn't. I wonder if it's that close, if it's still a mistake anyway, or if it's like, no, you timed it perfectly, you shouldn't be penalized for timing it perfectly. Or is timing it perfectly actually jumping a half second after the ball moves? Because if you watch it, you can see why the ref called it from the angle he was at. Either way, it wasn't just that mistake. It was a lot of mistakes.
Oh, you know, it always comes down to that last play as the reason you lost the game. But there's so many. It should have never came down to that. And that's why I agree with Mike, and I kind of push back a little bit. I'm sorry. If your strategy after the turnover is that we feel that we succeeded, if they're attempting a 48-yard field goal, that's not a good strategy. I know we missed it, but that, Peter, that should not be the end game. In this league, guys can hit 48-yard field goals with their eyes closed.
Listen, I love Mike Tannenbaum. I'm glad we have him every week on the program on Fridays. I'm excited to talk to him. Love him. I think he's tremendous. Does a great job. That was kind of an insane take, that you did the job if they were attempting a 48-yard field goal with time expiring. Because in this NFL, you're supposed to hit that. Hopkins missed that. That was all nerves that he missed that. And then he nailed it immediately after when it dropped to 43. But that was all nerves. He had plenty of leg on that. 48 is not – Don, if they held them to a 59-yard field goal, you could argue they did their job.
But 48. My goal is when I have the ball after the interception, the first goal is do not allow them to have the ball back. But also is that you're not even attempting a field goal. Because I don't even want to play the 59-yard field goal game. Remember that game in Carolina a few years ago? when they nailed like a 59, 60-yard field goal for the Giants to lose. I'm not playing that
game. It's true. Yeah.
A win is that you do not attempt a field goal. No. And so knowing that by playing the strategy they did, Washington was going to get the ball back, needing just a field goal with a full 2 minutes left. And I'm being charitable. 40 yards. So all the kicks go out of the end zone, right? So they start at the 25. So 25 is to 50. So say they attempted from the 35, 52-yard field goal. That's 40 yards.
40 yards.
You don't think in this league, especially when the possession before the turnover, Heinicke had a touchdown on two plays, that you can't get 40 yards in two minutes? Come on.
By the way, Don, I think I've been a very good friend to everyone in the tri-state. Mm-hmm. I have not been gloating. I've actually been sympathizing quite a bit with what happened there. It's a very tough, unfair way to lose. Can I just take a moment, though? How about that touchdown pass for Heinicke there at the end, though? That was something.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
Do you think it was luck?
I can hear it
in your voice.
Michael, again, I don't want to take anything away, but do you think his intent was thinking he was throwing it away?
Here's the way I look at it, okay? I think that when these announcers talk about back shoulder throws, I think they're mistakes. I mean, I know they're artists. They're not putting the ball. I think back shoulder throws a mistake. I think that there's no way he could have thread the needle to that point to put it exactly where that receiver. I thought it was luck. Sorry. So you're not wrong.
So then, by the way, though, especially if you think, see, guys, I got to tell you, that throw doesn't look like he's trying to put it out of the back of the end zone. If so, it was a horrible attempt to get out of the back of the end zone. It looks exactly. Well, I'm going to disagree. I do not think you're right about that, although I'll say this. I think Joe Buck and Troy Aikman spent a little too much time on Heinicke and not on Ricky Seals-Jones for the catch.
Well, see, that's what I was going to make that point, is that he definitely put it in a situation where either this is going to go off the fingertips of my wide receiver or it's going to go out of bounds. So it was a great catch, I thought. But I'm not going to take anything away from it. I think everybody's been disrespecting him. He's a good quarterback. They felt they can get an upgrade with a win-now team in Fitzpatrick. And as it turns out, if he continues to play the way he's playing, Peter, Fitzpatrick, when he comes back, is backing up.
Now, the numbers look like this. Heinicke was 34 of 46 for 336, two touchdowns and a pick. A QBR of 35.8, not great. And a rating of 99.6. Daniel Jones, 22 of 32, 249, a touchdown, no picks, a QBR of 68.5, and a rating of 102.2. Now, the player we talked about yesterday that really might deserve to have as many eyeballs on him as Daniel Jones would be Saquon Barkley. And you know, no one wants Michael to be wrong more than I do. Of course, Saquon busted one for 41 yards. That was one of his 13 carries. His other 12 carries amounted to 16 yards. Guys, this is a problem.
That's why I think it's you're doing him a disservice to say that, you know, it's his knee. It's not his knee. This is who he is. Maybe he'll get stronger and they could give him more carries, but he is a guy who will gain 0 yardage on most of his carries and then have a couple of that are big breakers.
All the more reason, Michael, especially the way he was performing outside of that one run, why those two runs after the interception were ridiculous. He's not the kind of back that's going to just get 4 or 5 yards just going straight up the middle. That's not his game. And the way the offensive line was banged up, they weren't going to open up too many holes for him. You got to use him out of the backfield. You got to use him the way Christian McCaffrey is used in Carolina, the way Bell was used with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it's just not happening. You better hope it's because of injury. Because if this is all he's going to be the rest of his career,
forget it. 13 carries, 57 yards, right? That's 4.4-yard average. That's great. You hand off three times, you get a first down. But you take the 41-yarder out, then it's 12 carries and 13 yards. I mean, come on. So most of the time, you're wasting your time. I mean, he's not going to break a lot. And I've said this before, and I get criticized all the time. I don't care anymore. Everybody hates me. But that was Barry Sanders. And the one big game that Barry Sanders played, what, he had 1 yard in that playoff game, Don? He had 1 yard. The great Barry Sanders. He'd give him the ball 35 times. He'd have 33 carries with nothing, and then he'll break a 70-yarder, he'll break an 80-yarder, something like that. I don't know if that's good enough.
I loved Barry Sanders. He was so much fun to watch. But take a look at his goal line stats. Because what do you do at the goal line? The goal line is to drive, move the pile. You're not making too many people miss when you've got a short field like that. He was useless when you get near the goal line.
Yeah, right? Listen, I hate to say it. I don't hate to say it. I'm proud to say it. You watched that game last night. You clearly think Washington has the advantage in running back with Antonio Gibson. And that's not what we thought Saquon Barkley was. He was so remarkable. And I just also feel like in year one, guys, it seems like they used him differently as well. Like I said the other day, like 900 yards catching the ball out of the backfield his rookie year.
He was rookie of the year.
That's not how they use him anymore. So hopefully they figure that out. Joe Judge says he is not putting the loss on Dexter Lawrence.
The biggest thing for him is, you know, it's going to be a tough lesson. It's a lesson you got to learn. A lesson we all have to learn as a team, that we don't repeat the mistakes one by one. We've got to see that, make sure we clean it up. These are obviously things we've talked about, coached, but obviously we have to do a better job, you know, in the future going forward. But look, I'm not going to put this on Dex. And I don't want to put this on Dex. Okay, Dex is a good player. He's a strong piece of our locker room. He's a good teammate. He's fun to coach. He's productive for us as a player. I'm not going to put this on Dexter Lawrence. Okay, there's things we all have to do better as professionals. All right, but I'm not going to put this on any one player or one situation.
So today, after he sees the tape, does he say that Dexter Lawrence didn't do anything wrong?
No, I don't think he's saying he didn't do anything wrong. He just
He said he's not pinning the loss on him. This was after the game yesterday. But today, when the Giants coaches, according to Lawrence Tynes, thinks that he didn't do anything wrong, that he was actually onside, well, do you erase that? He didn't do anything wrong? Or was he a little too quick? Because when's the last time you ever saw a guy over the center block a kick? When? When does it happen?
Unless you just completely, you know, blow the guy up, it's probably not going to happen that often.
But okay, tell me, pick right now. What was the worst play, though? In terms of, like, what the player did, what was worse, Lawrence or Slayton?
Slayton.
Slayton.
I think, and everyone's talking Lawrence today. But Washington blew the coverage. They let Slayton go. He was hit literally. That wasn't one of those ones that you go, well, it was hard. He got his fingertips on it. He got his entire hands on the ball. It was in his hands. You have to catch that.
And that
ends the game.
13-point lead with 6:17, I believe, to go. Now, obviously, it's not over, but you feel pretty good. It's a two-possession game. That's killer. But when you have that, when you have the holding penalty on the Jones run, when you had the back-to-back false starts, when you had the false start coming out of a timeout, there's a plenty of guys online that made mistakes that are costly. It's just the last play of the game is what everybody remembers. The Buckner play is what everybody remembers. But you're in the position you're in where that mistake kills you because of all the other mistakes that were made.
Right. So people are talking about Stanley throwing the ball past Gedman.
Right. Fact that Buckner was in the game to begin with. Like, right. So there's a lot of people that contribute to a loss. And there was a bunch of mistakes that were made, coaching mistakes, defensive plays. If you want to look at something positive, hey, the quarterback played well. And if the quarterback plays the way he played yesterday the rest of the season, they're going to be okay. From an offensive standpoint, they're going to be okay. But you're still 0-2, and you got a lot of work to do.
Joe Judge also said that pressure is part of this job.
Guys, we all get paid pretty well. Pressure's part of the job, right? I mean, my son's playing high school football right now. He didn't quite have that pressure because he's out there playing for fun. Every coach and every player, we're paid very well at this level. It's the ultimate level of competition. It's the ultimate team sport. There's pressure for all of us. We can handle that. We prepare to handle that. We talk a lot throughout our team building and our leadership building that when things like this happen, we respond the right way as a team.
Well,
yeah, he says it's Atlanta.
Is Atlanta next week?
Yep. Yeah.
So they have one more really soft spot there, guys. You talked about pressure going to this game. Atlanta, again, I could be biased. Atlanta's a substantially worse team than Washington. This is a spot for them to grab a win.
Hey, he says all the right things. I think he carries himself very well. He's an easy guy to like. But it just comes down to winning games, and you're not winning very many of them. Okay? What is he now, 6-12 as a head coach?
Yep.
That's
now. Did you see the situation on the sideline yesterday between Kenny Golladay and Daniel Jones?
Oh, sure.
It appeared to be that Golladay was going after his quarterback on the sideline. Now, closer look sort of appeared like Golladay might have actually been talking to Jason Garrett or maybe the OC and the quarterback. Either way, Daniel Jones said that him and Golladay are all good. Let's hear from Dan.
Guys, we all get paid pretty well.
No.
You know, he was frustrated with the situation. I don't really think it was to me or anyone in particular. So I think we're all good and love Kenny. I thought he played hard and did a lot of good things out there.
All right, Glennon has a beautiful bald head if you looked at that shot.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, an errant hair.
Oh, I thought you wanted to say some nasty comparison.
If we get pushes, we get pushes.
Thank you.
Frustration's going to happen, so I think sometimes it gets a little blown out of proportion, but, you know, we did see what we saw, right? And
thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey!
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, there was some frustration from Kadarius Toney, 20th overall pick. 0 targets, 19 snaps yesterday. He shared a meme on Instagram that read...
That's a meme.
That said, I don't be mad, ish just be lame to me,
nope.
FR.
What's FR mean?
For real.
Stop.
People then responded to that and said, oh, you know, sounds like Tony's frustrated. Then Kadarius Toney jumped back on to Twitter and said, y'all try to turn anything into something. SMH, we good over here.
You know, I'm going to take a big leap here. If I coached a team, I would not allow my players on social media. All they could do is make dumb comments and make themselves look bad. You're not on it. For the length of the season, do whatever you want during the offseason. I don't want to see you on it.
You know what? I fought you on that for a long time because I do think, in general, it's good to stay in touch with your fans because how else can you really do it? And a lot of good does come from social media. But you know what? Have somebody else do it. Tweet out the charity stuff you're doing. Make sure somebody can kind of go over everything with a fine-tooth comb so there's no misunderstandings about stuff. But you're right. When you look at the athletes that carry themselves the best in this town, whether it's Jeter, whether it's Eli, no social media. Don't you think that was kind of part of it? And don't give me the whole, social media wasn't big back then. At the end of Jeter's career, and certainly for the majority of Eli's career, social media was there.
Absolutely.
You know, and then they chose not to do it, and I think that's the better thing. So you don't get into those mistakes. You don't have the Dave Rothenberg, it was just the heat of the moment. You don't want that garbage.
And they don't realize, man, if you're a pro athlete, you're one of the few jobs in entertainment that anyone can have where you do not have to be on social. Like, there's no real gain for you.
Like James Corden has to be on social, and that's what makes him valuable to CBS.
Correct.
But your value as an athlete is what you do on the field.
Right.
That's it.
You know, I would love to be completely off social media. But the truth is, because I have a few hundred thousand followers, which is a semi-valuable thing for companies, for me to have no presence on social means that for ESPN and Hot 97 right. and WWE, I can't send people to their product. So they're not getting full access to what I'm capable of. Athletes, everything you do, you're paid for, is only on the football field. You don't realize how freeing that is.
I know,
who needs it?
You really can't do what we do to its full efficacy without being at least on Twitter. But that's not necessary for a professional athlete. It's just not. And you're just going to get yourself into trouble. But, you know, some of these guys – it sounds silly, and I've told this story before. I don't know if Peter's ever heard it. There was a former player slash now an analyst, this is years ago, that went on, my brother produced a football show on Sirius XM.
Oh, sure.
and he said some disparaging things about another player.
Okay.
And it blew up. It kind of went viral. Other news outlets picked it up. And this former player called my brother and said, "What are you doing to me?" And my brother's like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "What are you sending all that stuff out for?" It's like, "Dude, don't you get it? You said it on the air." Like, what, did you think you were just saying it in a vacuum? Like, sometimes I don't think they realize in the moment the amount of people that see this and the legs that it can have. You're not just sending it out to your followers. You're just not sending it out to a select few people. You are sending it out to the world.
Peter, can you read the first tweet again from Tony?
Oh, here we go.
FR.
What's FR mean?
For real.
Michael's going to get out the – he's going to be the English teacher.
Here it is. "I don't be mad. S just be lame to me, FR."
That's not doing much for your brand either. "I don't be mad."
Come on.
Come on.
You're better than that.
Are you talking to Michael or Tony?
No, I'm talking to – I'm speaking on behalf of Michael, half sarcastically, right, towards Tony. Now,
I do think that there's a different type of or different level of grammar on social media. But
oh, absolutely.
Even that was a little much.
Well, you know, I'm going to start tweeting like that, if that's okay. I'm going to just use a different level of grammar.
What's grammar? Your grandma?
Yeah. She's married to my grandpa.
Is it possible the Giants just haven't nailed all of their draft picks over the last several years, guys? Tony's story from college is pretty crazy. I'm pretty sure he was driving around with a gigantic weapon in his car.
Hmm.
I give everyone a second chance. Maybe he turns out to be a great guy. But
in some places in this country, that's a reason to draft someone.
You know, it's a great point out of you.
You know what we have to do right now, right?
We have to say goodbye to yes.
If you want
to
hear Peter's famous announcer breakdown.
Oh.
Right now. I'm doing it right now. You got to get the radio.
98.7. Bye, yes. I'll see you at picks 11 for the game.
All right. Well, you mentioned it. It's now time for your week 2 NFL announcer lineup. Don,
yeah.
You ready?
Yes.
I'm always ready for this.
I hate it.
All right, guys.
Best part of the week.
Not to me.
It gets you ready for the best part of the week. How about that? Last night, of course, we had the Fox team. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews, and Christina Pink on the game. But let's head to Sunday, 1 p.m. in Carolina, where the New Orleans Saints try to follow up that big win over the Packers. Jameis Winston takes on Sam Darnold and the Panthers, 1 p.m. on Fox, and on the call, your favorite, Chris Myers.
Hi, I'm Chris Myers.
He'll be joined by Daryl Moose Johnston and Jennifer Hale, also 1 p.m. Joe Burrow coming off his big win, busting up Michael's pick last week. The Cincinnati Bungles at the Chicago Bears, Fox, 1 p.m. Kevin Kugler will be joined by Mark Sanchez.
I'm not married. I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have kids. I just want to play ball and I want to win.
And joined also by Laura Oakman on the sideline, CBS, 1 p.m., the most putrid team in football potentially, the Houston Texans. They will take on Doo-Doo Brown. That's right. Baker Mayfield will wake up in his stadium and host the Houston Texans. The great Greg Gumbel on the call.
Now, SportsCenter with Greg Gumbel.
He'll be joined by Adam Archuleta and A.J. Ross, which takes us to Indianapolis, a game that will have Michael's beady little eyes locked in as the L.A. Rams take on Carson Wentz and the Colts at 1 p.m. on Fox. And, of course, he loves ping pong. He loves football. It's Kenny Albert.
Then I usually play ping pong. I've been doing that for the last week or so.
He'll be joined by Jonathan Vilma and the lovely, and I once made her feel deeply uncomfortable, Lindsay Zarniak.
Oh, that was awful.
I saw that. I saw that live.
With your very own eyes, am I right?
Right in the lobby in San Francisco.
Let's continue.
You never get out from under that, Don.
Let's continue the 1 p.m.s. You have a game that I am dialed into. The Buffalo Bills, favored by 3, and traveling to Miami to take on Tua Tagovailoa and the Miami Dolphins. Now, this is one of your very rare Fox, AFC games. It'll be a 1 p.m. game. on Fox. And play-by-play will be Brandon Gowden.
Wow, never heard of Brandon.
Not He'll be joined by Matt Millen.
Heard of Matt.
And on the sideline, you know this person, Sarah Kustak.
Well, that's basketball, John.
Ah, Sarah's doing football. Good for her. She's great.
How about that?
That's a star. She is a star. I'm not even making that up. She's a star.
Big, bright, shining star.
And
that's right.
And as big a star as she is, she's a nicer person.
I know. She's wonderful. There you have it.
That's almost too much.
The Brooklyn Nets zone. Sarah Kustak on the sideline for Buffalo, Miami.
It's really the Yes Network zone.
Sure. 1 p.m. on Sunday. Mac Jones, Bill Belichick. And the New England Patriots are coming to town to take on Zach Wilson and your New York football Jets. And on the call, there's only one man for a job like this. His name is Kevin Harlan.
Pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man.
He'll be joined by Trent Green and Melanie Collins. A couple more 1 p.m.s. Michael, another one you'll be locked into. And a matter of fact, this game is, if you missed it earlier, lock it in, the K-Show Pick of the Week. The San Francisco 49ers favored by 3 at Andrew Gundling's Philadelphia Eagles. Adam Amin on the call.
Now stands erect.
Sorry?
I've had dinner with Adam Amin.
Now stands erect.
Well, have you ever had dinner with Mark Schlereth or Shannon Spake?
Lick my fingers and touch it.
Nope. No.
They will also be on the call. The last 1 p.m. game, also a CBS vehicle, a 1-0 Gruden-led Las Vegas Raiders taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you know, if you have a big-time AFC matchup like this on CBS, there's only one man for this job. It's Ian Eagle.
Well, that's gotten ugly.
He'll be joined by Charles Davis and, wait for it, Mr. Evan Washburn.
The lobby is bustling. There is an energy here.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Sure there is. We head to 405. The Minnesota Vikings at the Arizona Cardinals. Gus Johnson on the call. He will be joined by Aqib Talib and Megan O'Leary. Sort of the newbies call, minus Gus, of course. But Aqib Talib and Megan O'Leary, who's a regular on all things MMA on ESPN. Also 405 on Fox. Atlanta taking on division rival, your Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Kevin Burkhardt on the call.
Keith, these are definitely not pumpkins.
He will be joined by Greg Olson and the great Pam Oliver. Which takes us to the Big Daddy, 425, the Dallas Cowboys at the LA Chargers. Hello, friends. Jim Nance on the call.
Hello, friends.
He'll be joined by, of course, Tony Romo.
Oh,
never touched him. That's a catch.
And Tracy Wolfson. Last 425 game, Tennessee at Seattle, a Seattle. Andrew Catalan on the call.
Going up high and bringing it down for 6.
He'll be joined by James Lofton and Cherie Burris.
Now, Peter, I have something to add.
Go ahead.
I have to go because this has droned on long enough, and I've got to tape something.
Have fun, Michael. Have a good
See
call.
Ya.
Good weekend.
Michael, we love you. It has droned on, and we wish you the best.
Bye.
Well, we're on our way out the door here, Donnie. Let's finish up with the Sunday Nighter. Although I just lost my page. Michael threw me off. I got it back. I'm in business. Kansas City at Baltimore. 8:20. Of course, you know who's on the call. Al Michaels.
He did what?
He'll be joined by Chris Collinsworth.
Here's a guy.
I love that.
Here's a guy.
Is there ever going to be a time where I don't crack on that? Single time. Why is it so funny?
Because it works.
And here's a guy.
And Michelle Tafoya. And then Monday night, Detroit at Green Bay. Packers 11-point favorites at Lambeau. ESPN 8:15, Steve Levy on the call.
I think my colleagues like me.
He'll be joined by Brian Greasy and, of course, his sound-alikey, Louis Riddick. Lisa Salter's on the sideline. If you're interested on ESPN 2.
And you will be.
Everyone's favorite, Manning and Manning, Peyton and Eli. That is your NFL announcer lineup for this Sunday. And that'll do it for ENN on this Friday, September 17th.
I thought about taking the Packers and bounce back at 11.
You'd be sweating it. I feel you'd be sweating it.
Well, only because of the way the Lions had the backdoor cover or the backdoor push, as I like to say. Against the 49ers.
If we get pushes, we get pushes.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.